When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Better Call Paul is a production of Lola Media. Say hi, Lola.
Hey, everyone. This is Paul Sarker from Better Call Paul. Just wanted to remind you that the show is intended for entertainment purposes only and is not legal advice. I am not your lawyer unless we separately agree for me to represent you, and the views expressed by Mesh and me are solely our own. Hey, everyone. Welcome back to Better Call Paul, the show where we discuss the legal and business side behind the scenes of Hollywood sports and entertainment. I'm your co-host, Paul Sarker, former Marvel lawyer and current big law media attorney.
And I'm your other co-host, Mesh Lakhani. Paul, how's it going?
It's going well, man. It's Diwali this weekend for the Hindu Sikh Jain community. That's like our version of, I guess you could say, Christmas, or you know, it's the biggest holiday of the year. It's the Hindu festival of lights, commemorate victory of evil over darkness, good over evil, knowledge over ignorance. It's like several days. Usually it's 5 days, but the peak is going to be this weekend, today and tomorrow. So there's a lot of events in New York City.
Are you attending these events?
Yeah. The plan is to go to one. It's the weather's good. There's an outdoor event on the Upper East Side. We're going to check it out. I think there's like some dancing and stuff. I mean, we're not decorating the house. It's just too much work. But Diwali's really becoming much more high profile, certainly for me. I know last year, President Biden had a big celebration at the White House. I had a couple friends and contacts that went there. Eric Adams does a party at Gracie Mansion now.
Cool.
And, you know, and you'll even see it in stores. Like certain retail stores are now starting to sell Diwali-inspired merch.
There's
because
big population.
Big and relatively affluent population. I think The median household income for the South Asian population, and we discussed this last year too, is like much higher than the overall median. I think it could be 80% higher. So it's a lot of people that want to, like, you know, they're walking the stores. They say, "Oh wow, Diwali themed plates and cups. I got to buy these." So
yeah.
Let's party.
Well, that sounds great, man. Happy Diwali.
Thank you.
Well, you know who's not having a happy Diwali? I'd say shifting gears a bit, but if we want to get into what's going on with Marvel, new Marvel movie coming out, The Marvels, starring Brie Larson. Obviously, it is a sequel to the 2019 Captain Marvel. Man, the estimates right now, I mean, by the time this podcast comes out, the numbers will be out, but really poor showing already for Thursday night open. It was 6.5 million, which is the lowest in their history. As a comparison,
Lowest in the history of the
MCU. Yes, sorry, specifically MCU. But in comparison, Cap.
Well, no, I mean, it's probably not lower than like Hulk, right, for Thursday, because those only started at midnight.
Yeah. Okay, fair enough. I think the Incredible Hulk actually was the lowest opening weekend to date with 55.4 million. They're saying that the Marvels originally was tracking $75 to $80 million open, and now it's tracking a $47 to $55 million open. The Thursday night opening wasn't great in comparison to Captain Marvel's Thursday night opening, which was actually pretty decent, around 20.7. So it's 6.6 million compared to 20.7. I think there's a lot of reasons for this.
Have you seen it?
I didn't even move off my seat to even open up Fandango to see when it was playing. As someone who watches a lot of movies, and especially the MCU movies, I just don't care. And it's also the reviews weren't great, right? So 61% on Rotten Tomatoes. Audience score was better. It's a third worst rated on Rotten Tomatoes. To be fair, the ones below that are Quantumania and The Eternals, were both pretty bad movies. But I just don't like care anymore. I just don't like, after being so disappointed, I tried to watch Loki. I just kept turning it off. Like, I just don't care. I just feel like it's going to be not a great movie. And I think that's what most fans feel. Like, they're just like, yeah, we don't really care. This is not really up our alley.
Yeah. I mean, it's a tough showing for the Marvels, especially because I think with it didn't test well.
No.
And I think they had to spend a bunch of money to sort of redo it.
Yeah, reshoots.
And, you know, it was like delayed by the pandemic. And obviously they weren't able to get the stars out to promote because of the strike, which recently ended. So they did do a little last minute promotion. But I hear it cost in the neighborhood of $270.
Yeah, it's expensive.
And so if it grosses like less than $100, I mean, that's a pretty big miss for Marvel. Yeah. And I don't even think, I understand like the SAG angle of it and not being able to have your stars promote, but I don't even think they promoted it, period. Like, I just think Disney was like, we're already so far in the hole on this. We're not going to spend another $50 million marketing this because it's just not going to produce.
I think you're right. I think that's actually a really good observation. Like, I've seen trailers here and there. Look, I like Captain Marvel in the whole Avengers thing. Not to get too nerdy about this, but like, I don't really care for that, this whole part of the story. And I think I just feel like I'm going to be disappointed. And I think most people feel this way now. Like, I don't think anyone, like, this whole Kang storyline has been a bit disappointing. It hasn't like gotten off to a bang. When we think about like the Infinity War saga, there are just bangers. So at least you cared about, you know, Thanos and you cared about where it was going. I think everyone's been so disappointed with how this thing has taken off. So everyone's just kind of confused. Like, do we really want to go spend money watching this when we know we're going to be disappointed? And I think that's generally seems to be the narrative around the MCU right now. It's been like that for the last, I would say, what, at least the last year. It's felt that way, that people are just a bit disappointed.
Oh man, I mean, listen, I think as a fan, I think I was working at Marvel when Disney bought Marvel, and there was rumors that it was like, oh, is Disney going to sort of like destroy the creative engine that made Marvel great, as they have a tendency to have just too many cooks in the kitchen, too many studio execs making decisions and pushing things in and out. I don't know that this is what happened here, because to be in Marvel's defense, like, no studio has 33 hits in a row. Like, yeah, that just doesn't happen.
Yeah, fair.
So there is some reversion to the mean in any sort of entertainment property or any entertainment business is going to have some hits and some misses. So that's just par for the course. But I mean, I think, and we've talked about this and it's widely discussed, milking Marvel to grow Disney Plus and constantly putting out shows that people have to watch to be able to understand the movies.
Yes.
I think that's going to result in fatigue. The team was overworked. The VFX level of quality sort of slipped because that's the final stop, right? Like, if there's a flip in the creative, or if someone wants to change something and the script is already written and it's 90% shot, really all you can do is try to fix it the best you can in VFX, and that unreasonable expectations on your VFX folks. You know, so the production timelines, the amount of content that they were creating, the characters, moving on from the core leading talent, the Robert Downey, Chris Evans, Scarlett Johansson, like, there's a lot of factors that I think are at play.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think if they kept the cadence where what it was, like one or two movies a year, maybe we wouldn't have noticed as much. But when it's like in your face all the time, I think people are starting to get a little frustrated, as you said. But adjusting for inflation less than Hulk, which came out in 2008.
Which I actually liked, by the way.
Like, I actually liked Hulk. I liked Hulk a lot. You know, the Ed Norton Hulk I thought was unfairly maligned.
I 100% agree. I've seen it so many times.
Yeah, it's a good, listen, it was well cast.
It's entertaining.
Liv Tyler, who's the guy who played General Ross? William Hurt?
William Hurt, and then you had Tim Roth.
Tim Roth.
Great villain.
Great villain.
Obviously from Quentin Tarantino's Reservoir Dogs and Pulp Fiction. Yeah, it was still a decent movie. Like, it was entertaining. It wasn't complicated. It's like, this is the story. And I think everything's gotten a bit complicated now because how does it fit into the whole universe? And if you think about it, the movies that haven't had to do that in recent time have actually done well. Black Panther 2. It was just a continuation of the Black Panther story. Did very well. People liked that franchise. And if you think about Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3, that did well in that, like, that storyline. It was a great movie. That was a year ago. And so when you look at, like, Ant-Man and Quantumania, I mean, I went to go see that movie. That movie was pretty bad. I had no idea what was going on. Didn't really care about Kang. This is the whole new storyline. So I think we just want, like, the big hits. Like, just give us the big hits, and maybe we'll be fine.
Looking back, I know it's 10 years old. I put Cap Winter Soldier as number one in my, I mean, Endgame I thought was great. Avengers, Infinity War, less so for me. But I think there's a lot of fluff in there. I love Thor, Love and Thunder. But recently, it's just been things that I think you can skip.
You like Thor, Love and Thunder? Or did Ragnarok? Because Thor, Ragnarok.
Oh, yeah. Sorry, I meant Ragnarok.
Yeah, yeah. Because Thor, Love and Thunder was...
I liked Thor, Ragnarok. Thor 3, I thought was great.
Ragnarok was amazing.
Probably the best Thor.
Best Thor. And I would say Love and Thunder was like, I would say worse than the second Thor, which was also pretty bad. So,
which is actually Jessica's favorite.
Oh, really? Okay. Well, you know, to
Dark
each his
World.
Own.
Yeah.
But yeah, look, and I think the blame on, you know, the strike and not being able to promote, everybody knows this movie's coming out. At any chance, you know that the Marvels is coming out. Just as comparison, I think it was the weekend before, 2 weekends before that, you had Blumhouse Productions had their Five Nights at Freddy's, which is a horror movie based on this video game that had an $80 million opening.
And it's simulcast on Peacock.
Yeah, so people clearly are hungry to watch stuff. What is the stuff to watch? That's, I think, the unclear part.
Well, I don't, you know, as a fan, I don't know that Captain Marvel was that great, but it still made $1 billion.
It did, and I think it was because of the way, one, I think we were still...
following Endgame.
The following Endgame, you needed to potentially watch it to see what happened. It was a nice, like, end credit scene in Infinity War that led to it. But also, I think we were, like, less fatigued back then. Like, they're still putting out bangers. So you're like, yeah, Captain Marvel sounds cool. Oh, yeah. Like, introduction of a new character.
After Endgame, I would have seen any movie.
I would have watched Love and Thunder. But yeah, we'll see. You know, I think I read something that like Echo that's going to be coming out as a standalone show. They're trying to make the shows not dependent on you having to watch anything else. And look, I think it's just make good shows and make good movies.
And if it has to be less, that's fine. I mean, next year, there's only one movie slated for release, which we'll get into after one Marvel movie. But we'll get into that after the break. So actually, let's take a quick break and come back with the resolution of the SAG strike. Okay, Mesh, biggest story probably in a long time in the entertainment world is after 118 days, SAG on late Wednesday night agreed to a tentative deal with the AMPTP, ending the longest strike in SAG's history. SAG, for those that don't know, has 160,000 members. Yesterday, or say Friday, 86% of the SAG board voted to approve the terms of the tentative agreement. And now it will be submitted to the 160,000 members to vote on and ratify it. And effective Thursday morning, after the negotiating committee approved the deal, they ended the strike. So what that means is a month ago, the WGA ended their strike, which was similarly 5 or 6 months. So effectively, no content was really being made, or the vast majority of SAG content requiring WGA writers and SAG actors basically stopped. Some things stopped in pre-production, some things stopped in development, some things stopped in the middle of shooting. And something stopped in post, and no one was able to promote anything for like 5 or 6 months, which is something that we haven't really seen since, I don't know, 40 years. The negotiating team at SAG is patting themselves on the back, saying they got a great deal, and production is going to start ramping up. I think people who are in the business, who are doing, you know, who are working in production, business affairs on the studio side, on the talent side, they're working nonstop now to sort of make up for lost time.
I can imagine.
Yeah, it's just going to be crazy to get everything going again. And that's going to take some time.
Like, that's not like, hey, everyone, let's start, let's go day one. I mean, there's probably so much logistics and organization and approvals need to be done to get things into production in the first place, right?
So if you think about it, so many things are contingent on the big stars. And so you have to coordinate their schedules. And for pre-production, you don't necessarily need the big stars there all the time. But when you're shooting and they're, you know, if they're filming in a specific amount of days, you need them to have the production going. So if you have big talent that's shooting and you're in the middle of production, you need to work around their schedule. The other thing is promotion is really important. So for something like Dune 2, you know, if you're Timothy Chalamet or Wonka, like maybe you'd rather be out there promoting those movies that are coming out in a month or a couple months. rather than shooting something. So,
well, I feel like a Timothy got lucky just because, you know, the two things that are coming out, he's going to be on SNL. It seems like they kind of knew that maybe moving into it.
I don't know if it was all planned.
Yeah.
I mean, I think there's been a lot of people that suffered, were out of work for a long time, but how did HBO know a week ago when all these things, like when they announced when all these shows were going to resume or come out, like
yeah.
they did? How did they know that? So it seems like the AMPTP, if you're them, they didn't lose a ton of subscribers to their streaming platforms over the course of the summer. Surprisingly, they didn't. Actually, Bob Iger said the losses were negligible, but if the strike had gone on much longer, they could have been significant. But basically, they're going to keep next summer's slate. They had a backlog of content. They didn't lose that many subs. And they eventually agreed to what SAG was asking, or some modified version of what SAG was asking for. And they all saved like billions by not making anything for a couple months.
Right.
So it is a little bit weird that they knew, or it seems like the timing is, I don't know, like everyone from both sides, like SAG clearly wanted to get a deal done, but the AMPTP, I think, finally moved towards the middle. This past week, they sent their last, best, and final offer Wednesday night. And that ultimately, I guess, with a few tweaks, is what was approved. But I felt like they were thinking, if this thing goes any longer, there's going to be significant consequences. And so, like, right now, they probably waited till they felt like they couldn't wait any longer.
Yeah. I mean, it seems like on both sides, it was like on the streaming side, it's like, yeah, we can probably handle this till the end of fall. But then it's people are going to really start noticing that there's not much out there. Like, I kind of felt that way. Like, just as a consumer, I'm like, there's stuff to watch, but I'm kind of like, I was like, there's stuff to watch, but I hadn't really felt that, oh my God, everything's gone. Like, I'm just watching reruns now. But it felt like we were close to getting there. So to your point about timing, it seems like this was, you know, enough for them to like milk what they had already in production or already done, and then make sure that they save stuff for the summer that they can get done before summer, but also like clean up their balance sheets.
Right. And to be clear, they did have to push a lot of stuff.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Like they had to push a lot of projects. So there was damage, and AMC's CEO, Adam Aron, said, hey, listen, I mean, we had a solid year. Our revenue was up 45% over the prior year. And, you know, thanks to Barbenheimer and the Taylor Swift movie, but like the pipeline's a little thin.
Yeah, looking, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Going forward. And they're nervous about that. They're thinking about, are we going to do more concert films, which don't have 18-month lead times? Are we going to do more live sports in our theaters? Because they've still got to make rent. They've still got to cover their fixed costs. And there's only one Marvel movie next year. So there's going to be consequences, but I don't know if the studios felt them as much as the ancillary businesses and the talent, right? But SAG, and let's discuss what they got, right? So they're touting it as $1 billion increase, which if you do the math, 160,000 members, that only works out to like $7,000 a member, which doesn't seem like that much if you do the division. But they got 7% increase in minimum compensation this year, effective on ratification, another 4% next July, and a 3.5% the following July. Background actors got an 11% bump this year, and then 4% and then 3.5%. So they are getting increases in compensation, which more or less track inflation, but still the largest they've ever gotten.
Yeah.
And so that's sort of, they're defining that as paradigm or paradigmatic. They're increasing the caps on pension, health, and welfare contributions. So just so you know, right, if you're a SAG studio, if you're in the AMPTP and you hire someone, you have to gross up their comp for pension, health, and welfare contributions. Now, there is a cap on that. So it's like an extra 20%. And there's a cap usually. What they did is they increased the cap. So that money doesn't go to the talent. It goes to this fund that funds everyone's pension, health, and welfare.
And from what I understand, the increases were pretty high, right? It was like a 43% increase for 1-hour productions and a 67% increase for 30-minute productions. I mean, the numbers sound high. I don't know how that actually is reflected, but I mean, it just sounds like a significant increase.
It does. I mean, so if you're at the cap, right, the cap is what it is. What that does, that helps the people who aren't earning near the cap, right? Because that goes to a fund that funds the pension, health, and welfare for everyone. And so, you know, you have to meet a certain amount of earnings per year to qualify. But it is good. It seems significant. But then again, if you figure that we've been in a 7 to 8% inflation environment for the better part of a year or 2 years, then maybe all you're doing is keeping up with the cost of living. One of the things they got, they're defining it as groundbreaking protections on AI. Really, the final details haven't been released, but what Fran Drescher described it as, every studio is going to need the informed consent of any actor, whether it's principal, background, whatever, prior to recreating their likeness digitally using AI, generative AI, what have you. So informed consent before someone's likeness can be recreated, which I think is good, but the devil's in the details there. Because if you're an actor and the studio just adds some sentence to your 30-page agreement that says, oh, by the way, you are consenting to us doing with your likeness, and it's in something that you sign and your lawyer looks at it and you're desperate to sign because you haven't worked in 6 months, then I don't know how much it changes things at the end of the day, but it does give you the bite at the apple to say that the studio has to ask for it. They have to update their form. They have to negotiate it. I don't know if there's any specific minimum compensation that needs to be paid, but in other contexts, there's this thing called a reuse fee, which is if you show up and you film a movie or a TV show and then they use that footage in another work, they have to pay you a certain amount. Either you have to negotiate for that extra use and pay you something, even if you don't show up for the next project. Or if they don't negotiate with you, there's some penalty fee that they have to pay. So I don't know if that is factored in here or if it's just a consent right. But if it's a consent right and you have leverage, then you can say, well, I'll only consent if you pay me X, right? So
I mean, but that just seems like something that was just dated from before anyways, because like that doesn't even have to be AI related, right? That could be like CGI related, or it could just be them reusing footage.
It's just reusing, okay. Yeah, it's something that was basically like if you're in a franchise and they don't hire you for the sequel, they can't use you in the sequel from what you did in the first movie.
Okay, cool.
Without paying you.
Got it.
You know, obviously the studios are sophisticated. I'm sure all the business affairs teams are going through the new agreement and just updating what they need to update, right? In terms of minimum compensation and the forms and everything, because they need to get back to work. But, you know, let's just go through some of the numbers. So California said that the strike had a $6 billion impact because it's not only the lack of productions, but it's also the ancillary businesses like the prop houses, the equipment, the companies that sell, like, you know, wardrobe, hair, makeup, all that stuff. They didn't do anything for
catering,
lighting, grip. New York City has announced that 200,000 New Yorkers are going to go back to work as a result of the resumption of film and TV. And that seems like a fair number. I think it's like between
180
and 200,000 people in film and TV. And they say a film and TV is $82 billion a year industry in New York.
Really?
Seems very high.
That seems
or at least that's what it was
high.
In 2019. In 2019, wow. That's okay. What it was.
I'm trying to even think is that just anything that's made in New York?
Yeah. I mean, I'd like to get more details on that. Does that include like news and talk shows and everything? Or is it just SAG talent?
Right.
82 would be, I think, high if it were just SAG talent, because it sounds like that would be more than the content spend for Netflix, Disney, Warner Brothers, like combined.
Yeah.
But certainly there's a lot if you add all of media, there's a ton of film, TV, news happening in New York, the talk shows and everything else. But I would like to see how the mayor's office came up with that number. There's some other ancillary wins. The streaming participation bonus,
that's what I was about to ask you about. Because, I mean, that seemed to be one of the big, big components here, because things hadn't been really adjusted for the streaming services. This actually dates back to, remember when Scarlett Johansson had such a big issue with releasing one of her movies on streaming versus in theaters?
Black Widow
during the pandemic, because she felt like she wasn't going to get compensated appropriately. So this seemed to be like a big win for them.
Yeah, I mean, win for sure, whether it's big. I mean, so
a win.
Essentially what's happening, and so for the past 12, 13 years, streaming residuals are a fraction of what network residuals were. So like in a typical streaming show, you might get $2,000 a year in residual payments, whereas if it were a network show, you could get $3,600 every time an episode was rerun. Yep. So last week we talked about how the Friends actors are making $20 million a year in residuals. Yeah. On streaming, it would be a fraction of that, less than 1%, right? So that was the economic model for streaming. It was new media. It was experimental for a long time. Now it's here to stay. So the success fee is coming back, right? But what streaming had always said is, we're taking the upside and paying you more upfront.
Yes.
But question is whether they were actually paying more, or maybe they were for a little bit, but the upside was going to the streaming companies, not necessarily the talent. So Fran Drescher said, we want 2%. Their initial ask was 2% of all streaming revenue to go to the actors. The studio said no, unworkable. Then they said something like $500 million, also unworkable. So now where they landed is, there is a fund that the streaming companies are going to pay into, which is basically, the math is a little wonky, but if you're on a show that is watched by 20% of the subscriber base for a streamer,
okay,
then the actors on that show, then there's a bonus of 100% of the residual base that goes into this fund. 75% of that go to the actors on the show. 25% go to all the actors on any streaming show. So the estimate is that this is going to be about a $40 million fund annually. So not $500 million, not a percentage
that doesn't sound like that much, though.
Revenue. $120 million. I mean, it's better than nothing, but yeah, it's not that much. But it's also something money. The streamers agree. It's not friends' money, no. But it's better than what they were getting.
Yeah.
And SAG is saying, well, in 3 years they get another bite at the apple. They're going to try to increase that fund. But right, basically what they're... this is their first ever success fee,
yep,
in streaming. So they view it as seminal in that regard.
Yeah, and I guess we'll continue to hear more about... I'm really curious to see how some of the AI stuff got resolved. But let's take a quick break and let's get back and we'll talk about how the studios and the upcoming launches of new film TV are going to be handling this. So, Paul, now we think about what's going to happen post-deal. And obviously, in this time period, what has happened is that a lot of studios have reduced content spend. So, I mean, Bob Iger said that Disney reduced content spend down. It reduced it by $2 billion. Netflix also reduced theirs by $1 billion. And there seems to be just more cash flow among studios. But to your point earlier, you know, it takes some time to get things going again. There's a lot of obviously movies and TV shows that need to come out. Production needs to go back in. People need to get their summer schedule going. What's going to be happening now?
So let's go macro, micro. So macro, you and I are going to be paying more for all our subscription services. Like the prices are going to go up. They've already been going up. Yeah. I think Netflix now, if you have the best plans, like $24, that's all going to go up. Fewer things are going to be greenlit moving forward because the cost to make everything is going to be higher. But that's big picture. Right now, what's happening is people are working nonstop to get things moving. So if you think about it, there's like, let's say, four phases. There's like development, which is casting, doing scripts, getting things off the ground. That is one phase. Then there's pre-production, which is something's been greenlit, but you haven't started shooting. Everything's already been cast. You're going to still be working on scripts, but basically you have the script. It's been approved. You're going to be tweaking it. That's pre-production. Then there's production, which is you're actively shooting. And then there's post and sort of promotion. So various projects stopped literally when the strike happened in one of those four phases. Certain things stopped in development. Certain things stopped in pre-production. Certain things like Deadpool 3 stopped in the middle of production. And then other things just were finished, but they weren't able to be promoted or they stopped in post. So there's a lot. There's probably, I don't know, a dozen major projects, film and TV, that are going to start immediately. And then there's tons and tons of smaller projects that may just get killed because they can't get their main stars to focus on them now. But let's talk about Gladiator 2.
Oh my God, I totally forgot about that one.
Gladiator 1 came out like in 2000, I think. And so Gladiator 2 was going to be a delay, but that'll probably come out next year. Deadpool 3 was halfway through production and they're going to resume. So that's Ryan Reynolds and Hugh Jackman.
Hugh Jackman, yeah.
Mortal Kombat 2.
Oh, okay.
Mission Impossible, Dead Reckoning 2.
Part 2, yeah.
So they were in the end of filming, but they had to do the last scene, which is critical to the whole movie.
Yeah.
They were 90% done production and they're going to finish the last scene, get everyone together.
Oh my God. So they couldn't finish the last scene.
No.
I'm going to be paying attention to Tom Cruise's hair. I want to make sure that they got that right. You know what I mean? Sometimes you can just tell with a little bit of a haircut.
Well, obviously there's going to be a lot on getting that right. Venom 3, Spider-Man Beyond the Spider-Verse, White Lotus, we talked about Stranger Things, Wicked, Beetlejuice 2. These are all things that are going to resume now that the actors have the go-ahead. And so, like I said, if you are in business affairs or casting or talent or an agent, you're working
nonstop
around the clock right now because you've got to coordinate schedules. You got to get people, coordinate travel, get deals done, maybe increase things, give people, if someone was on suspension, you're going to end the suspension. You're going to get them back to work. You got to figure out where you're shooting and when, because it's just a mad dash to get things rolling again. And like I said, most of these things have already been pushed a year. Marvel, I think the only movie coming out next year is
Deadpool 3 is the only Disney MCU film to arrive in 2024. Captain America, Brave New World, which was supposed to come out summer of 2024, and Thunderbolts, which was supposed to come out in December 2024, have now both been pushed to 2025.
So there's only one Marvel movie next year. Obviously, Dune 2 got pushed to next March. Wonka is coming out in December, so Timothée Chalamet can promote it. As far as TV is concerned, I mean, I think they're going to start maybe as soon as Thanksgiving on Abbott Elementary, The Rookie, Grey's Anatomy, because they want to have stuff ready to go for next year. But the end of this year is going to be super light.
Yeah, actually, now we were talking in the beginning, like we won't notice it. We're definitely going to notice it. I mean, we're really going to notice it in 2024, I feel like. I'm just looking at this release schedule from just Disney alone. And besides the MCU movies, obviously Blade is now 2025, Fantastic Four, 2025. Disney's Lion King spinoff, Mufasa, has been shifted to mid-2024, maybe end of 2024. Yeah, so there's a lot of
Inside
stuff.
Inside Out is next year.
Yeah, it's just
Inside Out 2.
I didn't realize they're making it Inside Out 2. So yeah, things are going to be pretty light for the beginning of 2024, it seems.
You know, Better Call Paul didn't take a hiatus.
No, we did not. But hopefully we'll have stuff to report on when it comes to film and TV in the next few months if there's nothing really coming out.
Well, we will. We will. Because, like, again, as far as the entertainment ecosystem goes, there's sports, there's news, there's music, there's all kinds of things other than film and TV.
Yeah.
So yes, film and TV, there's this huge backlog and things are going to be going a mile a minute to sort of catch up, but we'll be here to cover it for sure.
Yeah. And I think it's nice to know, cause like, I think there's going to be a lot of really great films that are going to be coming out that are not just the big blockbuster stuff. Obviously, you know, folks like A24 and production houses like that, I'm excited about. I'm actually, you know, randomly enough, I'm excited to watch The Killer, which is, I think just got released on Netflix, which is David Fincher's new movie with Michael Fassbender. So there's some things here and there.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's just been some allegations against Michael Fassbender maybe like 10 or 15 years ago about him, domestic violence. And so I think that's kind of alienated some of his audience.
Yeah.
He was great in Inglourious Bastards.
Yeah.
And X-Men First Class.
Right. And I think, I mean, look, it's important to highlight that there is an article here in BuzzFeed, disturbing domestic abuse allegations against Michael Fassbender have resurfaced online after the trailer for his new movie dropped. Sunawan Andrews accused the star of physically abusing her in 2010 with the alleged incidents detailed in legal filings. So that's very unfortunate. But we'll see how that gets, if people watch the movie or not based on that. But yeah, that's not good. Well, you know, regardless of that, hopefully we'll have other stuff to watch and plenty to report on. Like I said,
Well, yeah, I mean, it's good news, right? If the SAG strike went through the year, I mean, it would have been like, we would have been talking about 25, 26, you know, release dates, which are not good.
Not good at all.
But surprisingly, I didn't cancel any of my subscription services, so.
Neither have I. It's
maybe I should
because
have.
I forget what late. I have. So we'll see. I'm right now I'm still on my Friends binge, but hopefully we'll have some new stuff to watch. But until then, we'll keep reporting what's going on as we hear more about the SAG deal. And we'll be reporting more as we learn more about studios releasing production schedules. So good breakdown today, Paul. Hope everyone has a great week. And make sure you subscribe to the podcast, Apple, Spotify, wherever you choose to listen. Follow us on Better Call Paul, the podcast, on Instagram and TikTok, and follow me on Twitter at Mesh Lakhani.
Better Call Paul is produced and edited by Valentino Rivera and assistant producer Lisa Sanders. Have a great week.
Thanks, everyone.